Okay, we're back in session, and at this point, we'll hear from any member of the public in opposition to the proposed project. How many from the public wish to testify on this? If you could all stand, this is in opposition, we'll swear you all in at once. You swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Thank you. I will say, for the benefit of the public who's here, after this agenda item, we will be breaking for lunch and for about 45 minutes, and then we'll come back and take the agenda up in the order that it's listed. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
My name is William Rhodes. I'm a private citizen, property owner near Pearl's Neck, a retired psychologist, amateur historian. Before I really get into my, and I'll be very brief, before I get into my PowerPoint presentation, I just wanted to say, because Jones Neck or Jones Neck Island was referenced probably 7 or 8 times, I happen to have some insights into the history of Jones Neck. It's very emotional to say this is going to happen to Curl's Neck. Look, it's a washed away neck. in the 1850s, it was decided to reclaim this land. It was about 80% marsh, 20% upland, and what they had in mind was to put a dam all around the perimeter, dikes, as they called it, and sluices, you know, enable to allow the thing to be drained. What they had in mind, they didn't have a land shortage, but marshland was very, very rich and fertile in vegetation. Another thing that made this happen here was the freshets that came down, the floods from the western part of the James that came down here were not dynamic. Not especially dynamic, and the flood surges from the Chesapeake that affected the James were not very dynamic at this point either. It was a good place where you would not get floods that topped the dams very often. So this area was farmed from the 1850s all the way through the early 1930s by John L. Grubbs, who was born in 1825 and died in 1926. This was a successful operation. You could grow corn like crazy in here. What happened was when they put that canal through, you couldn't get mules to deal with planting, cultivation, harvesting, things like that. So this became an area of land where they could not maintain the sluices to drain the thing. And as a result, with all those dams around it, the water just sat in there. This is an example of what happens when man screws up nature's provenance here. And to make the leap that if what happened to Jones Neck is inevitable with Curl's Neck, if Curl's Neck doesn't get a permit, it's just the opposite. Had we done, had John L. Grubbs never torn the marshes up, those marshes would still be there. Anyway, and one other thing, as I start, is my understanding that tidal marsh is not land. It's considered surface water, and all the activities fall under the purview of the Commonwealth. And this will be important for the rest of my little presentation. Involving public access. Calm down. All right. The title of my little presentation is Two Marshes, One River, One Shared Fate.
In 1969, Richard E. Watkins owned Curl's Neck Farm along with his sister. That year, Watkins ordered the installation of an earthen dam to isolate the mouth of Curl's Neck Creek from the James River. This is a little Photoshop of my idea of what it might have looked like before they put this dam in there between the two arrows. This action served two purposes. It changed Curl's Neck Creek from a tidal tributary into a lake that was isolated from the river. Dam across the mouth. Here's another section of that dam to the south. A pair of 4-foot diameter drain pipes permitted Watkins to regulate the water level of the lake as he desired. No longer would he be dictated to by the tidal moods of the James. Having to contend with huge mud flats uncovered during periods when the tide went out was now a thing of the past for Watkins. Pity the duck hunters in tidal creeks elsewhere in the state who have to contend with mud flats and wait on the tides. By sealing off the mouth of the creek, public access was effectively eliminated. No more mud flats, no more fishermen, no more recreational boaters. Like some sort of a king, Watkins had created his own private duck hunting paradise right next door to a national wildlife refuge home to thousands of migrating waterfowl. Watkins based his actions on the so-called Crown Grant or King's Grant. In this case, it goes back to King Charles, allegedly dispensed by the King of England before Virginia had even become a state. According to Watkins, the grant gave him title to Curl's Neck land, marshes, and creeks, including Curl's Neck Creek. Watkins owned the creek, so he believed he needed no permit from any outside authority to dam it up. Incredibly, VMRC issued an after-the-fact permit for his dam while still questioning its legitimacy. That's not opinion. 4.5 decades after the dam was installed, the creek and the river are responding by working together to create a new mouth for the creek. Failed breach staunching, I think we called them tidal inlets here, but I didn't know the vocabulary. I called it breach staunching on state-owned bottom. Here's a good close-up. I'm sitting in a boat on the James River here, and this is a perspective. We're calling it again Curl's Neck Swamp breach on the river. Here's a 50-foot bulkhead on state bottom. Look at how professionally well done that is, and see how it's holding water on the other side. The far side of it is the water from the creek, and the foreground is from the James River. Here it is at high tide, and you can see the difference. Same bulkhead at high tide. This is the only bulkhead that we were able to see by a little flat-bottom bass boat. If nature succeeds, the creek will no longer be a private lake, in quotes, but again will be controlled by the tidal rise and fall of the James River. The owners have applied for a permit for an extension of the existing dam. This extension, in yellow here, this extension would be located precisely in the area where the new creek mouth is developing. Again, tidal inlets, as we call them here, I call them the breach area. What we see right here is a new mouth forming between those two arrows. This is a satellite picture, and I added the titles. Without this extension, the owners will lose the total control of one of the best duck hunting habitats in the state. It'll be next door to a wildlife refuge home to thousands of migratory waterfowl. Ducks are welcome, the public is not. In May 2013, signs appeared on the James River side of the unpermitted bulkhead that I just showed you, promising to prosecute trespassers daring to access the state-owned waterways, or tidal inlets, to the creek developing behind it, it being the bulkhead. The owners of Curl's Neck Farm contend in their application for a permit that a dam extension is necessary to protect the, quote, existing tidal wetlands of Curl's Neck Swamp from permanent inundation, end quote. They claim that this crisis results from documented sea level rise, this is interesting, and climate change. Documented means past tense. And according to this chart, of four different studies, they're predicting all the way up to 5 inches an increased sea level by the year 2050. So I think we have plenty of time to consider their permit. Okay, so what happens to Presque Isle National Wildlife Refuge just across the river? The refuge has a tidal forest swamp of 738 acres and a marsh of 189 acres under much the same ecological conditions as found in the Curl's Neck Marsh. The refuge has never had a need to put up the first dam to regulate water levels or to deny public access to boaters in their creek. Most importantly, the refuge has just completed a study that recommended no actions at this time other than to monitor environmental indices possibly related to climate change. Protecting their marshes with dams from, quote, permanent inundation, end quote, that is supposed to be visited upon Curl's Neck Marsh is not even on the radar at this time. For the refuge, it is untenable to suggest that the effects of rising sea level and climate change are about to impact only the Curl's Neck side of the river while exempting the refuge. Why such a different take from neighbors who have access to exactly the same data about the same river in the same area in the same time? The answer is simple. Watch this. This is aerial of Presque Isle and Curl's Neck. I superimposed the color aspects to this. But see where that six-pointed star is. That's the breach area. Pristine, pristine. Forget about any second guessing of any climate change in the future. An actual crisis in Curl's Neck Swamp is already underway. These folks are presently facing personal catastrophe because of the natural consequences of their selfishness in having dammed the creek in the first place. Mother Nature is working to reconnect, quote, their lake, end quote, to its rightful master, the James River. Only a dam extension can stop that from happening, and that's why these folks are so desperate to secure a permit at this time. Believe me, they hate being here and having to ask for it and exposing what they're up to. In closing, I would like to take this opportunity to urge the VMRC to defer approval for a permit for an extension to an existing dam at Curl's Neck Creek. Such a request should not be reconsidered until such a time as the Presque Isle National Wildlife Refuge also finds cause to apply for a permit to build a seawall, bulkhead, or metal or earthen dam. In river time, Curl's Neck will revert to a tidal creek on its own. No one should presume to interfere with this natural process. In the interim, I request the VMRC immediately designate a public put-in takeout landing, watch this, where citizens with non-motorized boats and inner tubes may conveniently access the state-owned waters of Curl's Neck Creek. Isn't she sweet? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, next. You had a question?
Well, I did. There's not a request that we seek to remove the current dam. That's not,
did not
under
that.
Consideration. It's just do nothing in this location is your point.
Yes, and a new mouth will be formed, and that will give us some public access right there. In the, I asked for a deferral, so in the meantime, some position in Curl's Neck, there would be public access. And it, we don't want, speaking for myself, I don't want what I'm facetiously calling mitigated access, such as the beach that was talked about. There's nothing to look at in that beach except a big harbor. It's beautiful, I'm guessing, having seen aerial photographs, it's beautiful within the area that the public is restricted in the Curl's Neck Marsh. And that's what we would like to have, some kind of safety zone where we could portage a kayak or a canoe over some area and not get arrested for being on state waters called Curl's Neck Creek.
So your issue is primarily with public access to an area that has heretofore not been allowed, at least since the construction of the dam. That's your primary point.
Yes, sir.
State your name for the record, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Brian Siff. I'm from Hanover County, Virginia. A couple things before my prepared remarks I noticed. Number one, the only thing unique about the Curl's Marsh area since 1968 is that it is a privately managed waterfowl impoundment on public state surface waters. That's the only unique feature there. All the historically unique elements of a freshwater water tidal marsh that this area creates have been destroyed by the original levee. Secondly, what McGuire Woods' representative mentioned that he wants to preserve is the natural habit from 1968 until today. What we're interested in seeing is the natural habit from 1967 back thousands of years. That was the real unique habitat. This guy wants to preserve something that man created in 1968. This is a freshwater tidal marsh. It's not a lagoon or an impoundment. Anyway, let me get on back to my prepared remarks. I am here to respectfully request that the VMRC not only turn down the current application, but also require the applicant to remove the illegal levee and restore the tidal wetlands to their natural state. I agree, this should be done at owner expense. In a state which is blessed to have some of the most unique freshwater tidal marshes on the East Coast and perhaps even globally, I was stunned to see quotes in the Times-Dispatch from people who allegedly have academic backgrounds in environmental science but do not seem to know the difference between contrived environment of an impoundment versus tidal flatlands. Anyone who wishes to know the difference can paddle up the creeks at Presque Isle National Wildlife Refuge or Turkey Island Creek. Then paddle over to what the USGS map shows as the mouth of Curls Creek. Ford the levee and see what an impoundment looks like. Be mindful, however, while you're on the illegally constructed levee in public water, you are subject to arrest. Once you are in the private lake embodied in public water, you will see, as Rex Springsteen did, that it is quite beautiful. However, if you refer to your USGS map, you will feel lost. The USGS map clearly denotes tidal flat. Several years ago, we unanimously passed a constitutional amendment codifying our right to fish in public waters of Virginia. At the time, I thought it might be a facetious attempt to curry favor with the good old boys. Attempts like this by the owners of Curl's Neck Plantation to deny access to public waters owned by all the citizens of the Commonwealth as surface waters demonstrate the importance of our constitutionally protected right to fish and enjoy state tidal waters. The notion that we are going to preserve a tidal marsh by preventing breaches caused by tidal activity is absurd. But for the illegal levee on the leeward side of Curl's Neck Marsh, fronting the James River, that prevents natural flow and flushing of the marsh, there would be no issue to consider for permit. This is the emperor's new clothes. There are no breaches. Landform This landform is naturally an ecologically valuable tidal marsh that already supports hundreds of waterfowl, fish, shellfish, and other wildlife, and invertebrates, not a lake. This lake bottom at Curl's Neck Farm is filled to overflowing with 44 years of nutrient-entrained sediment resulting from intense commercial sand and gravel resource mining and industrial-style farming. Millions of dollars worth of land-disturbing activity. Not once in 44 years has this lake been carefully dredged or otherwise allowed to flush, as an impounded tidal marsh does, twice daily. This lake is choked with sediment and bursting with lack of capacity. Before the earthen levees were built and the marshes were drained, Jones Neck was a mirror image of Presque Isle. Just look at the Google image. But for the destructive marsh disturbing hands of man, Jones Neck would be that marsh today. This permit application is precisely one of the circumstances the consent decree envisioned. The owners of the property have had 30 years to produce documentation demonstrating a King's grant. If documentation existed, we would not even be here. This application is an attempt to make an end run around the consent decree. Should the various state and federal agencies issue these permits to these petitioners for a water control project relative to Curls Creek, it is in essence acknowledging that the applicants own that body of water. The VMRC should simply turn down the application on the grounds that VMRC cannot issue a permit for an illegal impoundment of tidal estuary based on speculation about what may or may not happen in the future. This application makes absolutely no sense on scientific grounds. A tidal control project for this impoundment is absurd and certainly not in accord with VMRC guidelines for permit issuance. Do we need a tidal control project for Elsing Green? Do we need a tidal control project for Presque Isle? Do we need a tidal control project for Turkey Island Creek? Do we need a tidal control project for Kimmage's Creek in Lake Charles? The Rice Center removed their own levee in order to restore natural hydrology and ecosystem functioning. May I present this to the board? This is right off the internet. This is what Rice Center likes to brag about. The very thing that I'm telling you today is what's going to restore this area to a freshwater tidal marsh. The impoundment altered the hydrology and ecology of the wetland and its tidal creek, speaking about the Rice Center. Mr. Leonard Smock, I think, is the director. Now, I also want to point out, his own website is in direct contradiction of his support of this project. You know, they spent an ungodly amount of money to remove the levee at the Rice Center and want to brag about it, yet he's going to come out here and stand up and speak in favor of this project to create a cofferdam to prevent the very same thing that he eliminated. It is obvious the applicant is selectively ignoring what is going on around them. Remember, they are not required to place sound science in their application, and agencies only make decisions on what is placed in the file by all concerned. So it is up to the opponents to fill the file with facts. But for the illegal levee on public tidal waters at the mouth of Curls Creek, there would be no issue. 2,654 foot of sheet pile wall makes no sense to protect the existing high-quality marsh from tidal inundation that may or may not occur in the future. No one here will be living if and when the supposed climate change wreaks havoc and floods the Curls Neck Marsh. In point of fact, tidal marshes on the James will all be flooded too. Tidal marshes have no breaches. The Emperor also has no breaches. Just very deep pockets and a false claim of conservation at the expense of Commonwealth citizens who want to frequent the Curls Neck marshland freely and openly. On the day of his worst sinus infection, Aldo Leopold would smell this for what it is. He would rail against this and encourage all others who consider themselves friends of the environment to do the same. By granting the permit, you would allow the killing of two birds with one stone, no bait, planted or purchased. By granting control of this body of water to these private landowners through fiat, you grant them standing to claim it as their own without producing evidence of the king's grant. In so doing, you promote the conversion of precious tidal areas to waterfowl impoundments as an ersatz notion of conservation. I challenge you as environmental scientists and as stewards of the public spaces to stand against the special interests and not be fooled by the emperor's new breeches. The mitigation and environmental protection activities required for this proposed work are incredibly disruptive and destructive in and of themselves. The techniques were designed to make projects of critical importance as minimally damaging as possible. The mitigation and environmental protection for this work is not a woven nylon silt fence hand-trenched into the ground. Dredging, construction, and then removal of the earthen levees are massively invasive, bottom-disturbing activities. This type of massively destructive activity is completely unwarranted. The emperor has no clothes, deep pockets, but not a stitch of clothing. A complete hands-off policy would restore what is supposed to be a tidal marsh to its original hydrology and ecosystem functioning. Simply by removing the illegal 300-foot levee at the mouth of Curls Creek and letting nature work its own magic would do infinitely more good with infinitely less destruction and disruption. Got some points here that this permit could easily be denied on. First of all, doctrinally, you cannot even issue a permit on the basis of speculation about what might happen in the future. It's not even possible. Your very doctrine prohibits it. Things inconsistent with the ecology shown at Kimmage's Creek in the Rice Center. The berm is still not proven to be legal. I can't just take a wheelbarrow and dump soil into the state waters and play a flag on it and call it mine. Mr. Watkins never sent back the proper documentation to accept the consent decree. And the consent decree wasn't something that you guys chose. The court imposed that on you. This is the time to review that whole situation, not rush through with this massive project. That's all I can stand behind today. I have quite a list here, but under cross-examination, I could not respond to some of these things here. Any questions?
Any questions? Thank you.
Question, Mr. Plumlee?
Mr. Stiff, with with none of us having viewed the property that we're discussing, I mean the primary area that they're seeking to prevent tidal flow from, have you been there?
I've been recreating this area since I attended Camp Wyanoke in 1969-70, and to this day. So I'm quite familiar with the area.
And have you noticed the development of this mouth?
Yeah, I've seen them. I don't concentrate on that, you know. I hunt further east and also west. I do a little fishing, but, you know, that's not my prime focus. It just rankles me that, you know, there's been a lot of misspoken words from the McGuire Woods people about what's land. When you get to a tidal marsh, we're not talking about real estate. It's surface waters. It's considered surface waters. So to claim that this is real estate and this private property issue is pretty specious. And I think you guys know more about that than a lot of other people out here. You know, it's pretty complicated. But to refer to this as land or real estate, and then this whole argument about Jones Neck, that used to be a marsh. And if that was still a marsh, you know, or if it was left a marsh, it would still be a marsh today. It was the disturbance of the marsh that caused it to disappear. If nobody did anything at Curl's Neck, the eastern-facing side, the worst thing that could happen was there would be tidal activity. And the thing that makes these tidal marshes in this area so precious, especially at the Rice Center, is that the low salinity allows plants and animals that grow in very few other places in the state, in the East Coast, and possibly even the world to exist. It's a very unique situation there. And that's why the Rice Center likes to brag about what they did in removing their levee. And I just, this thing with the Rice Center, you know, the director of the Rice Center If you go right on the internet, I mean, I thought it was a booby-trapped document when I saw it. I was afraid to wave that thing in public. I thought it might blow up in my hand.
Any other questions?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Who's next?
I have a question.
Mr. Fox?
For counsel.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and ask that, and then we'll...
Question.
All right.
For counsel.
It's my understanding from some of the stuff that I read that there are King's grants and then there are other King's grants. Some King's grants include the water, and other King's grants do not include the water, but the water is left to the Commonwealth. And it was my understanding, again by some document I read, that many of the King's grants along the James River were ones that did not include the water. And I think the one that Mr. Mullen referenced, Morgan and so on, I believe that's in the Northern Neck.
I think that's right.
Where the water is included in the grant there, in that case. I haven't done any research on the title here, of course.
Mr. Chairman, can I answer that?
No.
But the question is, do we need to do more research into the King's Grant to determine who really owns that creek, or at least the title part of that creek?
With the applicant asking for a permit from the commission, there is nothing that requires the commission to determine whether the Commonwealth owns the bottom land, only because they are, in essence, acquiescing to the commission's jurisdiction. I'm trying to think a little bit more. I think that answers your question. And getting back behind what exactly was granted by King Charles to the people who bought property and conveyed it and so on, it is impossible to tell just sitting here, even if I knew exactly what the grant had conveyed to the initial patentee, where we would stand today, just because there would be so many conveyances mm-hmm. in between. And, of course, there could be limits on the conveyance. I've seen sure. King's grants where the next conveyance or one conveyance down the title is only to mean low water. And again, the thing with wetlands is, though, people have property rights to mean low water. Wetlands, by definition, are between mean low water and mean high water. So, anyhow, I think I answered your question.
I'm still a little confused, but
about
it would appear from the Protestants' point of view that there is an access problem, and that probably would be no access problem if this is public water open to the public, but for the dam that's across the mouth of the creek.
That's where the evidence is insufficient for counsel to make a determination.
Okay.
I think I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
I do not know the answer to that question with the information that's been presented.
Okay.
Mr. Beck, did you
have another question?
We're going to hear from you, but Mr. Beck had a question.
Yeah, I wanted to ask the attorney from McGuire Woods a question.
If can we just hold off on that for a second, Mr.
Sure.
Beck, and let's finish hearing from the protestants.
Yes, okay.
And then Mr. Mullen's going to get a chance to rebut any issues that he heard. And then we'll open it up for additional questions.
Right.
Yes, sir.
My name is George Little, Jr. I reside at 10225 Turkey Island Road. My family has been at that address for the last 73 years. I'm intimately familiar with the navigability, which was Curls Creek. I entered the creek as a child with my father for recreational purposes. It's been an issue for me for quite a few years, 44 years, give or take. I'm going to go ahead at this point and just stick to the script and go from there. In my opinion, Curls Creek is a Virginia marine resource and should be enjoyed by all the people of Virginia who are so inclined. So my issue is public access. It is because of this I am protesting the proposed berm project, VMRC number 121524, for two reasons. The first, this project is a direct extension of the 44-year-old levee that has prohibited unrestricted navigable public access for as many years into Curls Creek. I am protesting the lack of public access at the mouth of Curls Creek, which this project would seem to validate. I respectfully request public access to be restored at the mouth of Curls Creek. Number two, as a result of impounding water behind the levee, I have noticed breaches occurring since the 70s in the undisturbed swamp marsh area between the river and the creek. Some breaches have been dammed with elaborate structures. One breach has a 50-foot bulkhead made of pressure-treated lumber driven into the river bottom. Some breaches have given unobstructed tidal access from the river back to Curls Creek. In recent conversations with VMRC representatives, I have been told that the only permit they have ever issued for construction work from the formerly unobstructed navigable mouth of Curls Creek to the Army Corps spoils pile is the after-the-fact permit for the 800-foot levee across the mouth of Curls Creek. The structures in question lie in some tidal breaches south of the terminus of the 4,000-plus-foot existing berm structure. I am told there are no permits for these structures. The 50-foot bulkhead structure blocks navigable access to Curls Creek and should be removed. If these tidal breaches are allowed to be dammed by this proposed berm project, it will continue the legacy of no navigable public access to Curls Creek. Therefore, I respectfully request unrestricted navigable public access be restored to Curls Creek with the removal of any unpermitted structures and state-owned tidal breaches. I would at this point ask if there is a need to deny public access. Thank you. That's all I've got.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Commissioner, Associate Commissioners. I'm David O'Brien with the National Marine Fisheries Service out of Gloucester Point, Virginia. Wanted to provide some comments this morning. I believe a letter that I provided to the Corps of Engineers on this project is included in your packages. Just kind of want to reiterate some of the things that I had pointed out in that letter to them. It appears to me that this morning the decision before you is to continue practices that were initiated some 40 years ago, those practices of regulating, artificially manipulating the water levels of Curls Neck Creek and thereby affecting public trust resources within that impound area. As you know, the earthen berm was constructed sometime in the 60s and then authorized as an after-effect permit application by this commission in the late 1980s. The VIM study that was conducted in 1982, I think, led to the permit conditions that were included, which required the opening of the tidal gates for anadromous fish passage. Interesting point about the VIM study is that it confirmed the utilization of Curls Neck Creek by anadromous fishes. However, there was no such conclusion or study that looked at out-migration. So we really don't know whether the fish that are spawned up in Curls Neck Creek actually are getting back out to the James River main stem and contributing to those river herring stocks. I think most importantly for your consideration today is that over that 30, 40-year period, there have been some significant changes in our anadromous fish stocks nationally, specifically the existing status of river herring in a diminished state, that is what the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission has determined. The moratorium that they placed on river herring harvest back in January of 2012, and the fact that now river herring are a candidate species under the Endangered Species Act. As Mr. Robbins expressed this morning, we should have a decision on that very soon. I think the concerns that I have this morning, it's our position, NOAA's position, that this project has the potential to significantly adversely affect anadromous fish migration, spawning, rearing, production, and nursery habitat. The project runs contrary to our restoration objectives and may exacerbate the diminished condition of local anadromous fish stocks. NOAA Fisheries Service, along with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, USGS, have contributed a significant amount of funding and effort, both on a regional and national level, to restore and improve and enhance anadromous fish habitat. This project, as I said, seems to run contrary to our objectives. Therefore, I respectfully request that you defer a decision on this application this morning until such time as the applicant can provide the necessary fisheries and hydrologic data that would be necessary to make an informed decision on this project, whereby you could determine the effectiveness of the existing tide gates in passing anadromous fish both in and out of Curl's Neck Swamp, and that whatever data are gathered in that exercise be used in an adaptive management plan to manage those structures moving forward in the face of global climate change and sea level rise. And I just want to leave you with one thought this morning. This is excerpted from Commissioner Robbins' eloquent invocation this morning, that U.S. commissioners have the responsibility to make consistent or decisions that are consistent with sustainable resource management, sustainable marine resource management. And I trust that you'll take that to heart this morning when passing decision on this project. Any questions?
Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard? All right, Mr. Mullen, back to you.
Mr. Commissioner, I've listened to the comments of those who spoke in opposition. I've also been working to try to develop some language that could be included so that we would not have to ask that you pass on this or have to defer it, bring it back at another time. I'd like to ask if we could just have the lunch period to work on that. And then by rebuttal, I would offer you what we propose to include in that permit language. I've been working towards developing a language that could make a meaningful step towards a reasonable balance in permitting the preservation of waterfowl habitat, as well as not unreasonably damaging the fish that are currently present in the James River.
What's the pleasure of the commission? You want to take a lunch break and allow them to work on that language? Mr. Palmer?
Just make a motion now and be done with it. You know, we're the ones that make the decision on what the permit's going to be. I don't think we need to have somebody come and tell us we've caucused and this is what you should put in there.
Anyone else want to comment?
I have a general comment.
Mr. Fox?
As I see, we're down to, I see two major issues. One is the issue of birds versus fish. And I think with some information from VIMS and as suggested by Mr. Mullen, maybe some balance can be achieved here and we'll have a balance between birds and fish. That's something that everybody could somewhat live with. The other issue I see is the one of ownership. And if, in fact, and I realize back in the consent decree we agreed to disagree on the ownership, but if, in fact, we reopen the ownership issue now, then a whole lot of that creek area would become is public waterway and would be open to fishing and kayaking and whatever. And that's a whole nother issue. And if that issue goes one way, you don't need to discuss the fish versus waterfowl issue at all. If it goes the other way, then we are where we are with the dam across the mouth of the creek, and then the question is, can we add the steel structure and have some balance? And I guess it would have to be an opening time to aid the fish to do their thing and the birds to do their thing. So I guess that's where I am, and I'm not offering a solution here.
I understand. Mr. Mullen's still entitled to a rebuttal period of
yes.
time.
Right.
We've got to give him that. Question is, do you want to give him more time than that to work out some language? Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think at this point the biggest concern I have still revolves around the water management plan and how that will be developed and subsequently, presumably as a permit condition, reviewed by the commission. And I guess I don't see any downside. It is 1 o'clock. I don't see any downside to going ahead and taking lunch and then allowing the applicant to come back to offer their rebuttal comments. And if they care to be responsive to those concerns and their rebuttal comments in such a way that would benefit our discussion, I don't see a downside to that.
I would only add that I wouldn't mind hearing the rebuttal to what the protesters have gone forward with right now while it's all fresh in our mind. And if they need time to come up with additional language that they'd like to present as a possible condition, that we could break after his rebuttal period and hear that then. I don't know.
Without objection, that's what we'll do then.
Well,
so, you have.
Well, I think we also would need to hear from VIMS at some stage here, because they have maybe a different fish story than what has been presented.
Okay. We can hear from VIMS.
And I don't know when we need to hear from VIMS, but.
Well, what I would suggest is we hear the rebuttal remarks now. We break for lunch. We come back. We listen to the language they've developed. At that point, VIMS can comment on that language and any other point they want to make, and then the matter's before the board. Does that sound fair?
That's fair enough.
Everybody understand what the ground rules are at this point?
I'm certainly not suggesting we have two rebuttals.
No, we're not going to have
one now and then one after lunch. Yeah.
Quickly.
The doctrinal issue that I brought up, this is not permittable on the ground that they brought it, which is global sea level rise. It's not, you can't speculate in the future what's going to happen. So
yeah.
On those grounds alone, you're prohibited from. I mean, that was their stated purpose. If they want to enter another application with a different purpose, then maybe you could vote. But as long as their stated purpose in your own document is that the water's rising.
We heard your comments.
Okay,
we appreciate them. Thank you. Mr. Mullen.
This is a 5,000-foot, 30-foot-tall park placed by the Corps of Engineers with dredging spoils. This is a berm that existed from 1968, 1969 to the present day. The only present points of access to the interior of the Pearl's Neck Marsh would be by removal of some portion of that. That's not even under consideration today. The permit from 1989 attached to the consent decree is valid and of legal effect. The concept of a king's grant is beyond question. It is a matter decided by the Supreme Court of the Commonwealth of Virginia that if the King's Grant provides for the water, that the land beneath the water is included. That's Morgan's case. Those are really the only two points of rebuttal. All of the rest concern access questions. The only way currently to access the property is with a boat and a chainsaw or removal of the Corps' spoils and the burn.
Okay. Thank you. All right. We're going to recess until 1:45, and then we'll be back to hear your language.